I want to read a passage out of a book that I should introduce first. There are several collections of the Buddha's discourses, which were first collected in oral speech, right, in an oral transmission, but later written down. And this is a collection where so-called suttas, teachings of the Buddha, were collected according to their subject, or sometimes according to certain person, and this is actually five books in one. It's a very good translation by Bhikkhu Bodhi. The translation is the collection is called Samyukta Nikaya, which means connected discourses, basically. And the passage that I want to read is out of the second book, which is a collection all the teaching that have to do with causal relationships, like this comes from this and this comes from there, and because one is born, one gets old, and all these discourses that are about causal relationships. The most famous is probably the 12 link teaching, right? That out of ignorance comes this, and out of this comes that, and out of this comes that, and that's actually very profound, and it was, one has to remember that it was given not for the public, it was entirely for practitioners who dedicated their whole life for setting an end to suffering and meditating with their whole life. I mean, their monks have nothing left over, except they disrobe like me and come back and earn money, but those monks who heard these teachings were monks, even lay people who joined them, they were probably meditating for a long time. Most of the teaching of the Buddhas are very difficult to digest if you don't know much of the teachings. That's probably a reason why it's difficult for people to study the Buddha's original teaching, but it's so profound and so precious. And it doesn't matter that it is so much, because the Buddha said it has only one, the Dhamma. The Dhamma is, probably know already,
yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
It's a word for, can you follow me?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
okay.
English, okay.
Yeah.
It's, the Dhamma has only one taste, which is the taste of the ocean. No, it's like the ocean. The ocean, wherever you put your finger in the ocean, it has the same taste. You know Sudarshana, mm-hmm. Which taste?
Salt.
Salt, right. In the same way, wherever you taste the Dhamma, it doesn't matter if it's the words from the Dhammapada or whatever teaching it is, it has only one taste, and that is the taste of... No one knows?
Freedom.
Freedom, yeah, of deliverance, yes. Of liberation, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it has all the taste of, here's something that frees oneself. Nevertheless, when people start to read the teachings, they sometimes think that the Buddhist teaching is somehow nihilistic, because the Buddha says, because of this, we have this, but if we extinguish this, you don't have that. And you feel like, okay, it's about distinguishing everything, but that's not really true. Buddhists... Liberation is not liberation from something, it's liberation in something. Do you know what I mean by this? We don't get liberated from our body or even from our suffering, but we get liberated inside that, inside the liberation. There's freedom inside of non-freedom, if you want to say. Our bodies are totally limited, our mind is deluded, and you don't have to get rid of your mind or of your body to be liberated. Liberation happens inside that, because in the end it's only a wrong view of reality. There's nothing wrong with our bodies or with our mind. There is actually, as a matter of fact, not even absolutely saying, if that would be possible, there is nothing like a suffering there is no suffering. Suffering is just an experience, right? The one who suffers doesn't suffer, actually. It sounds funny. Of course, that is not the way the Buddha talks about that, because we experience suffering. But suffering is a question of perspective. Right? If you suffer from the loss of your boyfriend, I don't suffer from the loss of your boyfriend. Suffer is not absolute in this respect. It's your perspective, right? Suffering is a perspective, and the perspective is right view, and the wrong perspective is wrong view or delusion or not knowing, which is the state of our mind. It's totally deluded by how we experience life. And now I want to read a passage that has to do with four nutriments. It's all about food tonight. Nutriments. Yeah. First I read it. Thus I have heard, all suttas start with this, evam mi shrutam. You understand that? No?
No.
On one occasion, the Blessed One was dwelling at Savati, which is not so far away from your country. Savati is when you travel a little bit over the border of Nepali to UP. Okay. There is a place very close to the border.
Uttar Pradesh.
Yeah, it's called Mahed and Sahed now. It's not a big city anymore, but it was the capital city of Koshala, a region Koshala, where Uttar Pradesh is now, and where the king had his castle. Mm. And there was a place that was given to the Buddhist Sangha, and it became a huge forest monastery outside of the city, and the Buddha was spending 25 rainy seasons there and gave most of his teachings there. And that was the Jetta Grove, the king, the Prince Jetta's pleasure grove park, given by Anathapindika. That's why it's also called Anathapindika's park. And then the Buddha said, "Bhikkhus, there are these four kinds of nutriment for the maintenance of beings that have already come to be, and for the assistance of those about to come to be. What for? The nutriment of eatable food, cross or subtle. Second, contact. I explain that later. Third, mental volition. Fourth, consciousness. These are the four kinds of nutriments for the maintenance of beings that have already come to be and for the assistance of those about to come to be. Because these four kinds of nutriments have what as their source, what as their origin, from what are they born and produced. These four kinds of nutriments have craving as their source, craving as their origin. They are born and produced from craving. And this craving has what as its source, what as its origin, from what was it born and produced? This craving has feeling as its source." And now it's going on the whole circle of the dependent origination, how we call it. Feeling has contact at its source, contact has the sense basis at its source, and on and on. And I don't want to read this because this is not my subject. And if you think this text is funny, never mind, because the very next sutta, one of the most noble disciples of the Buddha, was asking, actually, it was the Venerable Mulyapaguna, "Venerable Sir, who consumes the nutriment consciousness?" Who is eating consciousness? And the Buddha said, not a valid question. I do not say one consumes. If I should say one consumes, in that case, this would be a valid question. Venerable sir who consumes, but I do not speak thus. Since I do not speak thus, if one should ask me, venerable sir, for what is the nutriment consciousness a condition, this would be a valid question. To this the valid answer would be, the nutriment consciousness is a condition for the production of future renewed existence. When that which has come into being exists, the six sense bases come to be, with the six sense bases as condition, contact. And it goes on and on through all the aspects. So we are not the only ones who legally ask, what kind of nutriments are meant here? I have never heard about this. Is there more food than the food I know? And as a matter of fact, this is amazing and mind-blowing and worthwhile studying. The Buddha actually looked so deep into reality that he could name what even scientists couldn't name. What is actually nourishing life? What is nourishing our life, our existence? And if we are honest, the whole passage, if I would read the rest, sounds a bit nihilistic, because it seems like this is just a troublemaker, this nutriment, because it has this as a cause and this as a cause, and one has to extinguish and look for the cessation of this, because on the end the Buddha says, all this mass of suffering comes from this cause. On the very end he says, such is the cessation of the whole mass of suffering. So honestly, when I first was reading this, not now, but many years ago, I was wondering, you know, I have never heard about these nutriments, but somehow one has to get rid of it. So my eating is wrong, my consciousness is wrong, and sense contact is wrong, and I had this nihilistic image. But of course I understood soon, luckily, that I was mistaken, because this is an explanation about causal relationship. But what is, first of all, before I go there, to make this a bit understandable, I went to my old computer and I actually printed out a page for you to see what was said. It's unfortunately in German, but that doesn't matter. So the Buddha talks about four nutriments. Nutriments, ahara, could be also translated as basis or as conditions, pachaya, conditions. So it is in the context of what conditions what, right? Birth conditions, aging conditions, death, and so on. It's in the context of condition. And as a matter of fact, all nutrition is a condition, right? We are conditioned by what we eat. The first is just nutriment, physical nutriment, like what we eat. And in the explanation of the Buddha, this is, we have to ask, if it's food, what is it nourishing? It is nourishing physical body, right? Our body. The second is called in Pali pasa. You know, pasa is something similar in your language, no? It means literally contact, and what is meant by this word is the sense contact we have through all our senses. What we see meets an object and gives us an impulse, a sensual impingement. All that we hear, all that we see, all that we touch, all that is sense contact. So we are nourished by sense contact. And that makes a lot of sense too. Because if you think about, we can't live by food alone, can we? And it nourishes feelings. The third is mano sanchetana, which would be literally translated maybe as mental volition. Mental volition. We could also say it's our free will. It's the mental will we have. The force that lets us do anything, like that you came here, you came by your will, right? And it nourishes our, not behavior, our doing, our kamma in Pali, which is our karma. Karma means doing. Our doing is nourished and conditioned by our will. And that actually is the only karma that exists in Buddhism, that what happens through our own free will has effect on us, but not actually the food. That's only bodily condition. Or the fourth is consciousness, vijnana. And consciousness nourishes the whole experience of human life, called in Buddhist terms nama-rupa, the material and mental experience. Nama-rupa is, I just have it on the wall actually, nama-rupa is form not the body, but form as we experience form through our senses. A sound is a form, what I can touch with my body, I'm touching form. Form is what I see. A picture is also form. And the way we experience our life is actually not with what is out there. We cannot really say what is out there. Even everyone agrees this is a table, but it is just the experience of a solid thing that somehow through my senses reminds me through a feeling. The feeling is what I perceive as a feeling. And in my memory, it says, oh, this is a table. I know this form. I have seen this before. But if I wouldn't know what this is, I would just experience a feeling. And that is what in German is Wahrnehmung, is perception. And the perception of things, along with what I have learned about in my previous experience, leads me to a mental state in Pali Sankara. Geisteszustand, habe ich geschrieben. No? I have a certain mental experience with this. If I hit my head against it, then I might be very angry about my table. I say, why have I done it this way? So anger, joy, whatever mental experience is based on a perception of things that I can only explain because I have previous experience with it. And about all this, I have a certain consciousness. I know that I call this table. I know that I see this table. I know that I like this table. And I know that I would be very disappointed if someone would kick it on the floor or whatever. All this I have, about everything I have a consciousness. And all this is conditioned on what? On the very simple thing that I have a body. If I wouldn't have a body, I would not perceive this table. Mm-hmm. If I wouldn't have a body, I would not know that this table is called table, because it is my body who heard table, 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 tabla or tisch or whatever. And without this receptors of my body, which are my sense organs, I would have no idea what's out there. Can you follow me? It sounds a bit funny, but If I wouldn't have a body, I would actually not even know what love and fear is. Because fear, or to be afraid of something, is after all a physical experience. If you would have never felt somehow discomfort here and stopping of your breath and shaking of your body, how would you explain what fear is? Inside of yourself, you don't know what fear is. You remember previous experience, and when something happened that you are afraid of, a certain memory connects with previous experience and you call this fear. And you experience that fear. You can even produce that mentally again. But all this wouldn't exist if you would not have your body. I hope this is mind-blowing for you, Uta. It is mind-blowing for me. Without a body, get it? You wouldn't know that there is love. Because all what you ever experienced as love, you have experienced because someone was physically, and if we say mentally, how it reached you was through your body, so what you listened to, even a smell, a taste, a hug, a feeling is nourished by the body. If you wouldn't have your body, you wouldn't call anything love, but you would be love. And you wouldn't be able to call this love because you don't know an opposite to it. The mind in itself is absolutely fearless and of loving nature. It is clear and bright and has no lack of anything. But because we have different experience in our body, we can name all these things outside. But these things don't exist without my interpretation. Now, when the Buddha says that we need more than food to nourish our life, I think he is very genius. Very, very genius. Now, when you think about what nourishes life, a step before that. All this teaching of the Buddha here, and actually in all contexts where he mentioned these four nutriments, it's given to explain that we have a certain desire for these things out of craving, and if that craving would be away, suffering would be away. So the Buddha did not really say that there's anything wrong with any of these nutriments, but he said that because there is craving towards this nutriment, there is further implication of suffering. If the nourishment is not a problem, consciousness is not a problem, food is not a problem, sense impression is not a problem, that the extreme desire for it, tanha, the craving for it, that is, in the Buddhist teaching, the root why we don't experience all what we are as joy and highest bliss, but as suffering. But until we are there, that we can actually see these connections, we have to be honest, we are not at the level where we can really uproot craving. So what I want to extract out of this teaching is simply the psychology that the Buddha found out what nourishes life. Because first I have to know what it nourishes, before I can see that my nourishment can be based on craving and lead to suffering. So I simplified this a little bit for you. It's again German. Yeah, it's readable. So I called it the four things that nourish me. Now when you for a moment think, if you would be asked, what nourishes you and what takes energy away? What makes you feel good and what is actually making you feel bad? What do you need to sustain your life? Probably you would be, or maybe I ask you, what do you need for your life? What nourishes you?
Sleep.
Sleep. Thank you. Give me some more. sleep, good friends,
friendship.
Mm-hmm. Go on. Security?
Yes.
Yeah? A warm bed?
Money.
A nice profession?
Nice profession, something to do.
Inspiration.
Mm-hmm. Inspiration. Mm-hmm. Go on.
Maybe a goal.
A goal in life?
Okay. Rich.
Mm-hmm.
And family.
Family. That's also what I would come up with. Maybe some would think about security or safety or protection or whatever. Health, how about health?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We are not stupid, because what our answers are based on our experience. The only difference to the Buddha is that we look on outer appearance when we say what nourishes us, while the Buddha looks on the underlying function of it. Now, when we talk about sleep, right? Who actually needs sleep?
My body.
Exactly. Your consciousness never sleeps. Your senses never sleep. Your cells need a change of nutriment. That is called Stoffwechsel. What is it in English? I forgot.
Metabolism,
right. Our metabolism is part of our nutriment. The body needs to change the nutriment and gets on working. But you never sleep, actually. Not really. Yeah. What was your point?
No, I didn't have a point.
No, I gave you one. Good friends. Where would you see this belonging to? What's happening when you meet a friend? You listen to him, you see him, you touch him, you talk with him. Because talking is listening, right?
Yeah.
What is this other than sense impression?
3 and 4.
Mm.
Okay. But you definitely agree that without our senses we don't have contact to people, right?
Yes, of course.
Right? So isn't that nice? The Buddha says life needs sense contact. You can't just live by food alone, right? But you need actually stimulus. So first of all, Mama Chen say, I really need good food, I really need good stimulus for my senses. There's nothing wrong with it. It nourishes life. It nourishes the feeling. So feeling is something that belongs then to life. What did Uta say?
Goal.
A goal.
Yeah, going somewhere.
Where would you locate a goal?
Maybe 3.
I agree, definitely.
I
what else?
Because I want to get something else.
Exactly.
So that keeps me going.
If you can't decide for a job, you will probably not be a very happy person. If someone offers you your friendship and your his relationship to you, and you are indifferent, and you can't open up for friendship because you cannot take a decision like you both did, let's marry. It's a lifetime decision, hopefully. What is this else than mental volition? Right? But mental volition is not coming from outside, it's coming from our mind only. And that's why I'm also entirely responsible for my decisions. Right? They have effect. So what was your point?
Didn't say anything.
Oh. I heard you mentally saying something.
I have to go.
Oh, you have to go already. I'm happy that I'm recording for you. Have a very nice work. Cheers. Now, what else did we say? Security.
Or a warm bed.
Inspiration.
The possibility to learn something. Mm-hmm. I think it's also. Yes.
So, do you agree that we can actually psychologically put all these experiences under one or two of these headings? No?
Yes,
which one?
But I think you must be open for these things.
You mean for friendship or?
Yeah, no, for exploration or for learning. Yes, it's not only a question of sense. It's more.
Oh no, I don't mean that. This is that is only belonging to one of it. But
okay.
Your openness involves your will, right?
Yes.
You need
that's
consciousness.
I mean. Yeah.
And you need sense impression.
Yeah.
You need contact with others.
Mm.
It's all involved, right?
Mm. Yeah.
But what is nourishing your life,
yeah,
somehow is very well summed up in this underlying functions of nutriment.
Mm-hmm.
Which is actually never heard and seen before. I have never heard anyone. I studied education, as you probably too, and we learned a lot about what nourishes a child in all aspects, but it was basically what are the conditions for children, but not so much what really our mental, physical experience basically needs. And now, the consciousness could be translated also as conscious experience, like I did here. Now, how about if someone has really all the food of the world? Is that person then better nourished than someone who has less? Or is someone who is very rich and has all opportunities of sense impressions better nourished than someone else? Isn't it rather that the Buddha is quite true to say that our always more and more and more of everything is rather leading to suffering than to a well-nourished life? I only want to give you this hint, you know, the Buddha is a perfect doctor. Yeah. So I want to invite you to nourish your life through a good amount of food, a good amount of sensual impression, a good amount of willpower, and of mindful experience and conscious experience of daily life. Because that is, first of all, the basis even to see any of the paths, of the Buddhist paths. To see then how this is part of a problem, like I just said, towards craving and so on, is a step behind this. So this is my Dhamma talk today. Thank you for listening.